Sawbones is a show about medical history, and nothing the hosts say should be taken as medical advice or opinion. It's for fun. Can't you just have fun for an hour and not try to diagnose your mystery boil? We think you've earned it. Just sit back, relax, and enjoy a moment of distraction from that weird growth. You're worth it.
All right. Song is about some books. One, two, one, two, three, four.
Everybody, and welcome to Sawbones, a marital tour of misguided medicine. I am your co-host, Ross Blotcher.
And I'm Carrie Poppy, and you might notice that we're not the McElroys.
Yeah, I am not Sydney, and you are not Justin.
Nope. In fact, neither of us have expertise in this at all.
We are not married. I am married.
We are not married, right.
But someone else.
Right. We're not married to each other. And neither of us has a
PhD.
Doctorate or an MD.
So... this is going to be a good show.
But Max Fun is doing this very cool Flippy Flu where we all host each other's shows. And I'm very excited because I'm a huge Sawbones fan. I don't know about you.
Oh, I definitely am. Yeah,
so
love their show.
Sydney and Justin are going to host our show and we're hosting their show this week.
So if you're like, I miss Justin and Sydney, well, go listen to Ono, Ross, and Carrie.
Exactly. And you'll get them.
Yeah. But, you know, keep listening. We've got interesting stuff for you.
Yeah. We're going to talk about near-death experiences.
NDEs, mm-hmm. as the insiders call it.
We're going to talk about NDEs in depth.
Oh, I like it. I see what you did there.
Thank you. You're ashamed of it, but you see it.
No. Yes.
So near-death experiences. So what do you think like the layman's understanding of the near-death experience is?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, it's so pervasive in popular culture where, you know, you see these images of white clouds and someone kind of walking towards the light. And mm-hmm. you know, generally here in the U.S., it's all about the Judeo-Christian view of heaven. And
sure.
So people go up and they get this decision moment. Oh, I'm going to go to heaven. It's going to be great.
Yeah.
But oh no, you've got more left for you back on earth.
Go home.
Yeah.
Go back. Your wife needs you.
And then you're sent back to your body to live your life, but tell others that the afterlife is real.
Totally. That's my impression
is that about
too.
Right?
Yeah, I think that's right. And it turns out that when people do have near-death experiences, they're in some ways kind of similar. Like there's the rushing tunnel is like actually a pretty common experience.
And that's one of the arguments for it is that it's consistent.
Yes.
Across different accounts.
Right. Although some people will, if they're Christian, they're more likely to say, I saw Jesus. If they're
right.
Buddhist, they might have seen the Buddha. If they're Hindu, they might have seen one of the Hindu gods, etc.
And you were already suggesting there's different components of the experience.
Mm-hmm.
So there's like the tunnel and then, yeah, there's meeting the ethereal being, and they don't always happen together. Some people will have like, you know, certain aspects of the NDE experience, which we'll get into.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you're right. For that one, with meeting your deity or angel or whatever it may be, obviously it's going to be constrained to your religious experience, or maybe not obviously.
Yeah, exactly. So like
that might say something.
Right. So maybe that means that So it could mean a couple things, I guess. It could mean that your brain is like telling you how to interpret this experience, and so it overlays your pre-existing beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
Or it could mean that whatever deities or powers are out there, that they express themselves to you in a way that you'd feel comfortable, much like the movie Contact.
That makes sense.
Exactly. So, Ross, you looked into like the long, long, long history
of
NDEs.
Near-death experience goes back a long ways, or at least stories of people experiencing the afterlife. So back in Plato's The Republic, there was a Greek soldier named Er, E-R, What?
I don't know. It just sounds like every time you're talking to him, yeah, you just sound like you made a mistake.
So, he was left for dead on a funeral pyre, and he awoke to describe a place where souls are judged, and there were passageways like that would lead to heaven or to torture. And then in the Tibetan Buddhist literature, they had the Das Lok. I'm sure I'm saying that incorrectly. Mm-hmm. But it essentially meant returned from the dead. And these were writings that also described kind of how to proceed into the afterlife. We all know about the Egyptian Book of the Dead, which also told similar stories just about people being able to communicate back stories from. And I think that's why this whole category is interesting, because we all want to know what happens after we die.
Oh, yeah.
But typically, you know, you don't get to hear about it because those people died.
Right.
They don't come back. So either you've got two hopes then. Either they'll come back at the last moment and tell you about this experience, or they'll come back as ghosts and tell you things.
So, oh, right.
So I think that's what fueled a lot of these historical stories. There was also many North American, Native American stories. There was one I read about a Chippewa chief who was like killed in battle, and then his warriors were going back. He's like, wait, guys, don't leave me here. Uh-huh. And he like follows them back, and he's trying to like shout at his wife and stuff, and why can't anyone hear me? And then eventually he goes back to his body and takes him like 4 days, but then he's able to come back to life and then walks back to his
Camp.
Yeah, right?
And then they're all excited.
Talk about a journey.
Yeah.
And then there was also a story about like a Lithuanian man who had an out-of-body experience. He was, you know, pulled out of his body, and he saw like them take his body and like got as far as the funeral. And then he went to like, kiss himself on the forehead or something. And then boom, he was back, and he got up and went home with them.
Oh, whoa. Okay.
Yeah.
And when was that?
I want to say it was more recent, like kind of turn of the previous century.
Okay.
I think.
So a little harder to verify. But
yeah. Yeah, totally.
And I read this one account. This was just a couple of years ago, but and I don't know if it's true, but it made the news that this woman was in her casket at her funeral because she'd been declared brain dead. She came to, saw like everyone kneeling over her coffin, had a heart attack, and died in her own coffin.
Oh no. That scared her so bad.
Yeah, actually died, because obviously she was very weak to begin with.
Oh, that is the worst. That's like everybody's worst fear, and then just like compounded.
Yeah, it's everybody's worst fear. Plus their worst fear.
Yeah. Oh,
man.
Poor dear.
I know.
It's horrible.
I don't even want to look up to see if that's true. Let's just assume it is.
Sure. I'm going to accept it on faith. Medieval Europe, of course, had many stories of the afterlife, and I think Christianity definitely played into these stories. Both of it, and this is interesting too. I don't know if this came up in your research, but usually we hear about really positive NDEs. The light and the affirmation. But in the medieval times, you also had like these horrible instances of torture and judgment and being pulled down by demons. And apparently that does happen.
It does.
But just a very small percentage of the time.
Yeah. That's definitely what seems to be happening now in the modern research, and we'll get into that more. But one thing that seemed to be a through line in my research was that when there were reported cases of hell sightings, they were only documented by Christian researchers who then concluded, this is sort of a sign that everybody needs to adopt our religion.
There were like two researchers who actually had those findings, none others did, and they were actually using it as like a ministry tool within the research, which was a little dodgy.
Maybe once you see that, you become a Christian. I don't know.
I remember I used to be a born-again evangelical Christian. I remember hearing those stories, you know, like the horror of smelling the sulfur and the demons dragging you down, and just this horrific imagery.
Oh yeah.
And that being used as kind of like a, you know, a frightener to say this stuff is real.
That would work on me. But I mean, even if you were just like, don't go to that Starbucks, it's on fire and people are being hit with whips, I would just be like, I'm not going there.
Right. Yeah. Totally. That would be a bad start. Might want to write the Better Business Bureau, or at least leave a bad Yelp review or something.
Definitely.
I hear people are being flagellated
at
the Starbucks.
And burned alive. I haven't actually gone, but rumor has it.
But if the preponderance of NDE research is any indication, it sounds like most of the experiences are very positive.
Yes. So
theologically, it points to a very loving, accepting, and forgiving God.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to take us into the current realm?
Sure. Yeah. So the modern research really started with this guy named Raymond Moody. Yes. There's going to be so many weird names involved here. We've got we've got Moody. Later, we're going to hit Malarkey.
Oh, yeah.
Raymond Moody was this guy who collected a bunch of anecdotes from people who had had near-death experiences, and he coalesced them into this book called Life After Life.
Big bestseller, right?
Big bestseller. I actually read it in college.
Oh.
Not for a class. I just happened to be in college. So Raymond Moody started like telling people that about these experiences. And every time he would go and give a talk, he said someone would come up out of the audience and be like, that's happened to me. And so he kept collecting more and more stories.
Oh, wow.
But, and here's where he kind of shot himself in the foot. Oh, okay. Sorry.
Oh, he was a doctor, right? I think he was collecting stories out of his practice, but that's interesting that he kind of branched out and just started collecting them from the public.
Right. And then he kind of shot himself in the foot by keeping everyone's stories anonymous. So some people wanted to be anonymous, and then he just thought, oh, let's just anonymize all of them. Well, now we're just taking Raymond Moody's word for
it.
No one can follow up on it. No one can say, okay, well,
check details.
Right. Exactly. Because what you really want, like the holy grail of near-death experience research, would be someone who had an experience where they saw something that they couldn't have seen through their body that then is verified. So like, let's say,
yes,
I'm dead for a second, and you're in my hospital room while I'm dead, and you weep and you say, oh, it's so sad because I never got to tell Carrie that her mother is a nun. I don't know.
Yeah. So,
something that like I wouldn't even know.
Sure.
And then I come to and I say, you know what? I remember standing in the room, seeing my body. I remember Ross crying and tripping on a banana. And then he said my mom was a nun. It was crazy. He had a red shirt on. And then you say, yeah, all that stuff happened.
That is veridical.
Veridical. Yeah. That's
what they refer to it as in the research.
Right.
Meaning true.
Yeah. Right. verifiable. Yeah. Verified.
By the way, I meant to note, for those of you wondering like why I didn't react like, oh, Carrie, why did you read Life After Life? That's because this is Carrie.
Oh, right.
And of course, she would read something like that. So just
yes.
So you know, normally with anybody else, you'd be like, oh, why would you read that book? Carrie will read.
Oh, of course. And so would you.
Any crazy. Yeah, yeah. Totally.
Yeah. For people who aren't aware of our show, like this is a lot of the stuff we're into. We love like paranormal claims and looking at this stuff from.
We are strange people.
We're weirdos. And we like looking at this stuff from a scientific viewpoint.
Hey-o.
However, we are still not Sydney and don't listen to us. Anyway. So Moody interviewed over 1,000 anonymous people, and they mostly had similar experiences. So Moody concluded that there's definitely an afterlife.
Mm. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
He came away convinced.
Yeah, completely. So there's another guy named Bruce Grayson, who's
yes.
a big researcher. He's mentioned in Mary Roach's Spook, which is one of our favorite books.
And this is all recent enough, too. They're all still alive.
Yes. In fact, I'm going to get to an email that Bruce Grayson sent me this morning.
What?
Yeah. So Bruce Grayson is this big researcher who's studied near-death experiences by doing something pretty genius, I think. Do you know about his big study?
Yeah, where he kind of isolated those different components of the NDE and then created a rating scale by which he could kind of measure how strong of an NDE experience it was and how deep it was.
That is right. But also, what I think is really genius is that he would study specifically cardiac patients because cardiac patients who are kind of in very extreme life or death states often have to be put into clinical death in order to treat their hearts. So especially if they're putting sort of a device that kickstarts your heart in there, they have to stop your heart to do it.
Yeah.
So he went to these places where there were cardiac patients, and up above on the ceiling in these operating rooms, he put a laptop or an iPad that shone up toward the ceiling and projected an image. So, and there were 12 different images. So one was like a blue rabbit, and then another was a red house. Hmm. Things that would be pretty memorable. They were very vivid, brilliant colors. So the thought was, if you do actually leave your body and float up above and go toward the ceiling, you could see this image and you could report back, oh yeah, there was a random glowing red picture of a house, because that would be a pretty memorable random detail.
That's such a smart, obvious thing to do. You know, if people
yes.
say they are floating up, you know, the brain can generate amazing simulations of the world, and we do that in our dreams all the time.
Right.
Kind of the opposite view of this whole situation is that our bodies are sitting there in the situation, and maybe some of our senses are still working. Mm-hmm. Apparently, hearing is one of the last ones to go.
Right.
So maybe just from that information alone, or maybe the sense of touch, we can put together a lot about the scene and then kind of tell it back later.
Right.
And then you have a situation where, you know, people can really accentuate the hits and be like, well, that's right. Or, you know, we can slightly change our story based on the retelling and the response from others.
Or think you remember it that way. You know, if I'm in your room and you come back and you say, Carrie, weren't you wearing a blue shirt? And I'm like, it was either blue or purple. No, yeah, I think it was blue.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And so, yeah, having that kind of objective thing can help show if it's veridical.
Exactly. But I want to tell you an update on Bruce Grayson.
Okay.
So when Spook was written, which was 10 years ago now, it was 2005, Grayson was right in the middle of his research. And Mary Roach actually finishes her chapter on near-death experiences by saying, if Grayson ever finds someone who can say what was on that, what that picture was, I'll be a believer.
Oh, okay.
So I went to see like, okay, I mean, 10 years ago, you'd think like he has some conclusions now. So I went and I was searching all through his website and whatnot, and I couldn't find anything. Hmm. So I emailed him.
You'd think this would be a big deal if someone had.
Right. So I emailed him and I said, you know, I was rereading Spook this afternoon. You know, you're prominently featured in it. I was wondering what became of that study. Did anyone ever correctly identify the picture being projected up at the ceiling?
Yeah.
So he just wrote back to me 28 minutes ago, Ross.
What?
And here's what he said. Okay. Dear Carrie, no one in that study had any recollection at all of anything that happened during the procedure. So we did not have any near-death experiences to study. Thus, the study did not provide any evidence bearing on the question of whether or not people can see from an out-of-body perspective during NDEs. It's disappointing, but in retrospect, the study may not have been as perfect a setup as I had anticipated for studying NDEs. The period in which people were without heartbeat was generally just a few seconds, and they were all premedicated with sedative drugs that interfere with memory in order to prevent any of them from having traumatic memories of having their heart stopped and undergoing electric shock to restart their hearts. So the bottom line is that we have lots of anecdotal evidence of people having accurate out-of-body perceptions during NDEs, but still no experimental evidence.
Oh, that's very clear-headed and honest.
Yeah, for sure.
It's definitely one of those claims that could be confirmed but never disconfirmed.
Yes, as pretty much anecdotes are. So this is kind of the problem with anecdotes, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you want to trust the person telling you the story, but without being able to check up on it, what can you really do with it?
And the disconfirmation, I guess, could come in the form of people remembering things incorrectly.
True.
But again, those stories seem to just be kind of brushed aside, like, oh, well, you know.
Yeah, I mean, and I don't know that I'd even make note of that in my mind. You know, if you said, oh, I think I remember you wearing a blue shirt, and I was like, no, I was wearing a pink shirt. I wouldn't even think like, oh, that's disconfirmation, you know? Like, I would just think, yeah, no, you were asleep.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Of course you don't remember.
Yeah, so it's only the stories where like, oh my goodness, you got the right color.
Right, that you remember.
Pop up, pay attention. I remember hearing the story that apparently is like very famous about someone, I think it was also cardiac arrest, but she had floated out of her body and she had seen like on the ledge of the hospital itself, a tennis shoe.
Yes.
And then supposedly people found it later, but all kinds of problems arose with the story that there was never like a patient by that name. Maria was her name, like, you know, at that time at the hospital, and they couldn't verify any of the details, essentially.
Yeah, and actually, this is really funny. There are three supposedly verified examples of people traveling and seeing something, and all three are shoes.
Oh. Okay.
Or at least by this one.
This is a very useful power.
Right? Okay, so there's that one where the shoe is like a tennis shoe on the ledge in the hospital, but the woman who went to grab the shoe and said, yeah, it's there, didn't take anyone with her and didn't like take a picture of the shoe. So great. Not very useful. Another, maybe you've heard this one too, was a red shoe that was actually on the roof of the hospital.
Oh, I went searching for red shoe because I had kind of remembered that, and then I found the tennis shoe store that seemed to be the most popular. And I was like, oh, I must have misremembered the red thing.
No.
Look at me red being shoe veridical. On the roof.
So again, like, no one really, like, wrote down the details of like, okay, then who went and verified the shoe? Was it in view when you drive up to the hospital? Like, no one really checked up on those.
Gotcha.
And then the other one is a woman who said to her nurse, oh, you're the woman with the plaid shoelaces. And she wasn't wearing plaid shoelaces that day. She had only worn them on a day when the woman was brain dead.
What?
Yes. So what? Here's the thing, Ross. If you die, you are going to know so much about shoes.
Yeah, that's right. Your shoe vision opens up to unimagined capabilities.
Maybe heaven is just like a beautiful shoe repair shop.
God's really into shoes. He's got a shoe fetish.
Yeah. Maybe when people return to their bodies, they're just misunderstanding God because he's like, shoe, shoe.
Get away from heaven. Shoo. Shoo.
And then they start going back. And then he's like, no, I was saying you get new shoes.
Come back.
That's probably what happens.
I think we really cracked the story on this one.
So Grayson's hypothesis is that clinical death basically allows us to change the channel on our brains. Mm. So just like a TV, we're only tuned into certain things because our brain can only focus on so much.
Yeah.
While we're alive, our brain is focusing on all the sensory inputs, all the emotional inputs, everything going on in the body. But just like a TV, there's all these other channels out there that you're just not listening to. So when you are clinically dead, your mind can focus on all these other things that are coming in from the spiritual realm.
And it seems like these studies were very closely tied to looks at out-of-body experiences. Very similar phenomenon. Mm-hmm. But of course, the OBEs can happen without the near-death situation.
Right.
And other corollaries arise, like drug use. You can take certain drugs.
Ketamine.
Hashish, ether, other anesthetics, hallucinogens like LSD and even DMT, that you can have these kind of mystical experiences and all these different pieces of the NDE experience.
Totally.
So that says something. Also like under the duress of like heightened gravity, like for pilots. Airplane pilots, like who get subjected to like 6 Gs or plus.
Oh, right.
You know, they'll black out momentarily and they'll often come back with those stories as well.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's interesting. With ketamine, apparently the experience, if you take a lot of ketamine, which we are not recommending, apparently the experience is very much like an NDE. And there was one doctor who was like, this is a way to like study the our connection to the afterlife. And then he was found dead in his bathtub next to a bottle of ketamine. Guys, don't do it.
This whole field is really tough to study because obviously you can't like get a grant to nearly kill a bunch of people and see what happens to them. And a lot of these studies seem to focus around cardiac arrest patients because that's like one of the easiest situations where you actually have data about their, their blood composition, the amount of oxygen. That's a huge issue. And a lot of research into this has focused on the presence and lack of oxygen as being an important factor here.
Right.
And also the presence of too much carbon dioxide as another factor. But even when you do get, let's say, like 300 something people that have undergone cardiac arrest, it will only be a small subset that actually experience NDEs or can report on them later. Right. And it's usually like 12%. Somewhere in that range.
Yeah.
And so even then you have to wonder, well, what is the role of memory? Have they forgotten? Did they experience it at the time? Or was it as they came back that they actually had the experience? And there's just so many fudgy details here that really make it hard to nail down what's going on.
Yeah, for sure. And, a lot of the times they're looking at the brain signals, whether there's brain activity, but sometimes there's brain activity that we can't see yet.
Right. Yeah. The machines that we use to monitor that I read were kind of compared as like a 1 megapixel camera versus like a 8 megapixel camera.
Right.
There's could be a lot still going on that we don't know about.
Right. And it's about how much we need for doctors to do their jobs, right? If your brain is at this low a level of activity, you are definitely in danger. So they need to start resuscitating you.
Right. And our way of monitoring brain activity is always by proxy anyway. All we can see is oxygen supply or blood flow, we can't see, you know, actual neurons firing.
Right.
We don't have the equipment to do that.
Right. So when we call someone clinically dead, there might still be some action going on in that brain. So, you know, when people come back and say they've had these experiences, one of the responses is like, that's impossible. Like, they were dead. Well, dead doesn't necessarily mean what we think it does in this setting.
Right. Yeah. And just like in The Princess Bride, Miracle Max says, you know, oh, he's not dead. He's just nearly dead. Mm-hmm. It's the same kind of thing. Like, well, all of these people who are telling these stories, they didn't actually die because right. here they are.
Yeah. Well, unless you believe they came back because of the shoo-shoo.
Oh, sure. We've kind of alluded to this, but there's two major hypotheses. One is the afterlife hypothesis, which mm-hmm. is, I think, what most people take as a lesson from near-death mm-hmm. experiences. And then there's the dying brain hypothesis, which mm-hmm. is kind of the idea that this is symptomatic of what happens to the brain as it's going through that death right. process, when it has less oxygen, when it has a surge of neurotransmitters, that it will experience these various mm-hmm. phenomena.
Along the lines of what you were saying of a lot of these experiences being similar, there's a researcher named Michael Sabam who catalogs descriptions of the afterlife that near-death experiencers have had. And the last time he published, literally half of them, 50%, were nothing but sky. And the other entire 50% were idyllic fields, sometimes with a gate.
Interesting.
No people, no clouds. Well, clouds maybe, but no angels on harps and whatnot.
Yeah, that consistency piece breaks down a little bit because it seems people have these kind of outlier stories that don't fit within that typical narrative. Mm-hmm. Oh, another researcher is Kenneth Ring, and he spoke to many people in one study of 102 stories. He cataloged kind of the core experience and how prevalent it was. So the feelings of peace mm-hmm. occurred in 60% of the stories.
Okay.
So just a majority. The actual out-of-body component was only in 37%.
Oh, wow.
Of the stories. Yeah.
Okay. So they still probably didn't feel, they weren't in their bodies, but they're not like having that experience where they're looking at their bodies.
Exactly.
Okay. Right. Got it.
Entering the darkness, that was 23%. So that's very common to be going through a tunnel.
Yes. Sorry, what percent was that?
23%.
Oh, okay.
And then seeing the light, I guess, is a separate phenomenon. It's mm-hmm. not always there, was 16% of the respondents.
Oh my God, I would hate to go through the tunnel and not see the light.
Yeah, right? Just in this tunnel.
It's just like Alice in the rabbit hole.
Never ending tunnel.
Yeah, a clock floats by you.
But this whole thing is where we get like the, you know, walk toward the light.
Yes.
Phrase.
Totally.
That we all, you know, yell at each other.
Yeah, one has to wonder if it's possible that a lot of our views of heaven just come from people having these experiences so long ago that they started talking about them back when heaven started to be talked about.
Totally.
Now, Ross, if you were trying to find like the most excellent near-death experience.
A tubular one?
Yeah. Where it was just amazing that a person could have seen anything at all. Who would you want that to be? What would be the holy grail person who would see something they couldn't have possibly seen? Maybe a blind person?
Yeah.
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 Okay.
Right. That would make sense.
So there are these studies called the Mind Sight Studies that are entirely about blind people who had NDEs and say they could see. Supposedly they saw their doctors, they saw the room, they saw the people who had visited them. But again, no one really documented all of the details we would need for an independent party to go back and verify.
People, pay attention.
Yeah, right?
Whip out your cameras. Jesus.
Exactly. But there was one woman, Nancy. She was blind, but she reported seeing her lover and her ex-husband watching her be wheeled out on a gurney when she was clinically dead. And they went back and verified that, yeah, her lover and her ex-husband, two people who maybe wouldn't normally stand next to each other, were standing next to each other watching her be wheeled on the gurney. They find this very, very compelling. I'm kind of like, I mean, if these two guys are close to you, even if they're not close to each other and you're dying, yeah, I think they'd both show up.
Right, right. Yeah, this comes down to like, psychic reading, it's very similar, where like a lot of these things just could be inferred
right
very easily.
Right.
Oh, she was on a gurney. That's amazing. How'd she know she was on a gurney? Now, if they had wheeled her around like on a stuffed crocodile,
sure, that then would be I'd be very impressive.
Gurney,
Well, I think the more impressive part was supposed to be that she knew who was looking at her. And it was these two people who would normally not be together, her current lover and her ex-husband.
Sure. All right. Yeah, on the face of it.
Yeah, it's like a little, but I'm still just like, yeah, you were dying and the two most important people in your life showed up. Yeah.
It's one of those situations where, yeah, the second you get to know those people better and the situation, right, all of a sudden it's like, oh, well, it makes sense.
Sure, yeah.
There's a list that Moody had put together. He put together a number of lists of common features of the NDE experience, but they include ineffability. The lack of an ability to describe what's going on. People would comment on that. Hearing the news.
Hearing the news?
Yeah. Like, you know.
Like suddenly they're like, there's a backup on the 405.
Are you aware that the bird is the word? No, I think the idea is that someone would kind of notify them like, oh, you are dead.
Oh, you know, okay. All right.
You are going through this now.
I'm Fritz Coleman.
feelings of peace and quiet. That was a very common recurring factor.
Sure.
A loud noise.
Yeah, like a popping.
Or even like a rushing sound.
Oh, right, right, right.
And it's interesting, like many of these different factors are tied to certain modes of death as well.
Okay.
Which is very telling. And again, like a really good avenue for research. The dark tunnel, as we've discussed. The out-of-body experience is another. Meeting others, we've talked about. Either loved ones. And that was interesting. That was cultural. Like in the U.S., you were more likely to see your loved ones. In India, you were more likely to see deities.
Okay. Can see that.
The review, like having a review of your life. You know, we've heard about your life flashing before your eyes. Very common. Let's see, the border or limit. So like coming to the end of this and like kind of having a decision point. Coming back, so that process of returning.
Shoo.
And then, and then telling others. And then the resulting effects on people's lives as well. New views on death and corroboration. So those were
okay. Yeah.
So that extended even back to once they were back in their habiliments.
I do remember in Life After Life, the Moody book. I do remember there being a lot of cases of that. Seeing your life flash before your eyes.
Yeah.
And people kept saying you saw all of your life all at once, like it was. It felt like 1 second of your entire life. And again, ineffability, they would be like, I know that sounds crazy. I can't really describe it. But like all of a sudden, you know everything that happened all at once.
It's like
and
telling
then it's gone.
Someone your dream.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Oh my God.
If Madonna and I were on the rooftop and then as we were driving around, well, I know we were just on the rooftop, but it makes sense. We were actually in the car.
And then she became my mom. I know that's weird, but like, she still looked like Madonna, but I just knew she was my mom.
This is a good story. Right. Keep going.
I always find myself like trying to convince people of stuff when I'm telling them my dreams. Like, okay, I was picking a flower, but it was super creepy. I know that doesn't sound creepy, but trust me, like it was
go
super
with me on this.
Creepy.
It's a creepy flower. Another study I was looking at was they had been talking to people who had like fallen off of cliffs, like off of high heights. And I was just amazed that any of them were alive, but there were enough that they could talk to some of them. And yeah, the life flashing before the eyes was very common. And also that, again, that sense of peace, which is interesting. It seems like when people get in these situations where they're about to die, it seems like the body does kick up those neurotransmitters and gives you like this just sense of peace. Maybe it's just to help you maybe focus.
Yeah. Or accept. I don't know.
Yeah.
Have you ever thought you were about to die?
I almost drowned in a pool when I was 3 or 4.
Great. And psychics would do a great job on you saying there was an accident in water.
Right. Totally. Uh-huh. Yeah. How cliche. And I remember that's like one of my first visual memories that I can kind of go back to is like I fell through like one of those Cheerio floats. The donut hole things. And I remember just kind of like looking around and being like, I don't know what to do. I have no control over this. My sister saved me. And I told that I was resuscitated.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I don't have any memory of that. Again, I was 3 or 4.
Okay. So you don't remember if you had any transcendent experience?
Don't have any recollections of near death.
I thought I was going to die twice.
Okay.
And I definitely got senses of peace in both times at moments when you'd think would just be filled with panic.
Yeah, yeah.
One was on a plane, and I'm not even afraid of flights at all, but like for some reason there was just a particular jostle that just my immediate reaction was like, oh, the plane's crashing. And I just remember being overwhelmed with like, okay, well, that's okay. I did a good job. Huh. Like, it's okay.
Well, for every one of you, there's like 90 people like screaming and running around.
Sure. And maybe if it had lasted more than 3 seconds, I would have been like, oh, maybe I should try to stay alive.
But there was no instant review of Carrie's life?
No. But if that happens from actual death, it's not like my brain was dying.
Right.
The other time I hit a semi head on because I lost control of my car. Yeah. Oh, my God. It was terrible. Yeah. I actually think Ella Poppy pulled my purse strap was around the emergency brake and I was going on the freeway. And I think she stepped on the purse and it pulled the emergency brake up. So I lost control of my car. I spun around and I hit a semi head on. And when you're about to hit a semi, you know, you're just like, okay, this is it, right?
Yeah.
And so as I was about to hit it, all I remember is like this peaceful feeling and then thinking, oh crap, everybody I know just has a dead friend now.
Oh, that was just, your last
that was
thought.
It. It was just like this sort of like, oh man, and then just like, oh well. But then I hit it and they had stopped in enough time and I had like, you know, gotten enough breakage and enough time that we just kind of went bing and then I took and went off the freeway.
That's horrible. Yeah. When did this happen?
That was 2008.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
I think we just met around then.
Maybe.
Okay.
Yeah, maybe.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Or yeah, maybe it was a little after then.
Yeah.
Okay. So like, how do I not know this? My thought is always like, if I'm thinking like about a situation where I would die, it's always like, oh no, how's my wife going to figure out all my passwords?
That's great.
That's always my thought. Like, she's not going to be able to access anything. She's going to be shut out. She won't be able to find anything or get like money.
Maybe you should give her all your passwords.
Yeah. I've been creating a master list.
Oh, good.
For her.
That's hilarious.
That's like my first thought.
You were mentioning that very few people like see hell or see anything negative.
Right.
One of the things that Grayson said is that he had people that he would think of as horrible people. Like one was a mobster murderer who saw paradise. So he was like, I haven't had anybody who like you'd think was going to hell report anything of hell. So that's interesting.
Huh. Yeah. So, yeah, if you're going to accept these theologically as bolsterers of belief in life after death, then it might shake up your views of the afterlife. But again, you know, that's always God's judgments, not ours.
Sure. But I think some people might come to a universal salvation conclusion from that.
Totally.
Ross, I have so much more to tell you.
Yeah.
But before we get there, would you follow me to the billing department?
I think staying connected is really one of the best gifts that you can give during this holiday season. And I think Aura Frames is a really good way of doing that. Here's what you do. It's a digital photo frame. You set it up for the intended recipient, or they can set it up themselves, you know, if they're a little bit more tech savvy. But once that's done, you are able to send pictures onto that photo frame from anywhere wirelessly through the Aura app. So imagine this, you set it up for grandma and then you capture a picture of the kids at the zoo. Maybe there's 5 dolphins. You're like, holy crap, grandma loves dolphins. She's going to love this picture. Well, she could be seeing it just by uploading it directly to her frame. Even if grandma's already got one, what if she needs a second one in the toilet? Or it doesn't have to be in there. It could be anywhere. But imagine that. You get beautiful designs from Aura range from like, I just saw the new Carver mat it's new to me. I got a new Carver mat frame. It's really beautiful. I like all the designs and I think you will too. Not just for you though. Maybe it's a gift, but you know what? Grab one for yourself. You're going to be jealous. For a limited time, save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $35 off Aura's best-selling Carver mat frames named number one by Wirecutter by using promo code Sawbones at checkout. That's AuraFrames.com, promo code Sawbones. This deal is exclusive to listeners and frames sell out fast, so order yours now to get it in time for the holidays. Support the show by mentioning us at checkout. Terms and conditions apply. You've probably heard about HelloFresh in the past. It's a huge meal kit in America. I mean, the number one meal kit in America. But this fall, they're serving up even more love. Folks, this isn't the HelloFresh you remember. It's new. HelloFresh has doubled its menu. Now you can choose from 100 options each week, including new seasonal dishes and recipes from around the world. You can also, if you're into veggies, you can eat greener with some new veggie-packed recipes that have two or more veggies per dish. That's, I gotta say, folks, that's ambitious for me. I think a two-veggie meal, I'd be feeling pretty darn good about myself. I really like this new offering from HelloFresh. All these options, you are definitely going to find some stuff that you love. The best way to cook just got better. Go to HelloFresh.com/Sawbones10FM to get 10 free meals plus a free breakfast for life. One per box with active subscription. Free meals applied as discount on first box. New subscribers only, varies by plan. That's HelloFresh.com/Sawbones10FM to get 10 free meals plus free breakfast for life.
Okay, so I also wanted to tell you, Ross.
Yes.
Do you know who Dinesh D'Souza is?
Oh, yes, I do.
Do you want to tell us who he is? Give us a brief
intro. He's kind of a, I don't know, Christian evangelical... I don't know, debater, gadfly. He writes deceptive books and says deceptive things.
Yeah, I mean, you're not doing that voice because he's an evangelical or anything.
No.
Because he's just sort of a blowhard.
You can be a very honest, wonderful evangelical, but blowhard is the right word. Didn't he make like a documentary about Obama, like supporting?
Oh gosh, I don't even know. I don't follow Dinesh very closely because he's so annoying.
Supporting like all these absurd arguments about him. It's frustrating. You hear him in a debate and just know he's being dishonest. Like, he knows he's lying. I don't like that.
And he also, he broke the law at some point, like a campaign financing thing, I think.
Oh, that sounds familiar.
Yeah. Well, anyway, he reviewed all this evidence, and he has a book called Life After Death, The Evidence. And it's forwarded by Rick Warren. And he uses NDEs to say everyone should convert to Christianity. But unsurprisingly, he uses all the examples of people who have very Judeo-Christian experiences, the few like hell experiences, mm-hmm. and so on. So it's very easy to sort of cherry pick these stories.
There are many of them in the popular literature.
Mm-hmm. Go on.
For example, Heaven Is For Real was a huge bestseller.
Yep, remember that? I think that was made into a movie.
Yeah, it was. A recent movie, I think, did actually quite well, uh-huh. which is unusual for those, you know, kind of Kirk Cameron-type Christian films. This right. one didn't involve him.
But that one was written by a little boy who had that experience, right?
A little boy's astounding story of his trip to heaven and back. Yeah, but then there was another one written recently. The Boy
by Alex Malarkey.
Yeah, The Boy Who Came Back From Heaven. And little Alex Malarkey had told his story with the help of his dad. And then years later, it was 2010. And then I think it was this year, 2015, he kind of came out with a public statement saying, hey, you know what? I actually made all that up. It's not true.
I was 10 or whatever. Yeah.
Don't ask me about it. But, you know, don't let this diminish your faith.
Right, right. And I believe he's a quadriplegic.
Oh, is he?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Anyway, very brave guy to come out and say that.
Yeah, totally.
The last thing we should mention, I think, is the AWARE study, which is a very big deal. And basically, they took Grayson's original study where they're projecting images upward in 20 hospitals in dying patients' rooms. And originally when they put out their entire plan for publishing and their budget and whatnot, they said they were going to publish in 2010. But in 2010, they were like, oh, we don't have enough data. So they finally published in 2014, and they reported that although people did have NDEs, not one person saw the image and recalled it correctly.
Wow. How many people had NDEs?
You know, they didn't actually say. They just said, although some people had them, no one saw the images and recalled them correctly, at least from what I read, which may have been the abstract. There may be
more. So it took extra years of saying, oh, we're not getting what we want. Mm-hmm. Let's do it longer. Let's do it. Which, you know, that's fine.
Yeah, that's fine. But we're talking about 20 hospitals. So
that
not one person did it. Yeah. Starts to be a little.
Says something.
Yeah.
Totally.
A little questionable. But as they say, absence of evidence is not evidence of absence.
Sure.
Sure.
Bigfoot could be out there.
He could. Or she. Or she, Ross.
Sorry, Bigfoot. I didn't mean to be gender
I'm the one who said he.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. Anyway.
I was going to call you a bad name, but let's see.
So that's all I had to say.
Oh, okay. So So we're left with a very difficult field to make heads or tails of, because you have the trickiness of the different modes of death, the very small numbers of people who actually have these experiences, the different types of experiences within that that don't always line up. And so there's consistency, but there's also inconsistency. And it's very hard to track and to know exactly what's going on and what's due to the brain's activity and what is, you know, a Cartesian dualist other self, you know, body that is ethereally floating about. And so the scientific community seems to lean towards the more materialist view of this whole situation. That is that the brain produces these things, and that for example, you know, this tunnel vision is your optic nerve being acted upon by the lack of oxygen or other chemicals surging, and that's what's creating the darkness with the light in the center. The lightness that is always described as being like the brightest thing they've ever seen, but not painful, which makes sense if it's, you know, not an actual light. And other aspects can be explained through functions of the brain in that kind of panicked survival mode.
Right. And then the spiritual community would say, that's all fine and good, but maybe God or the spirits or whatever give us these experiences, and that's how they give them to us. They use the brain. They use the tools of the materialistic world to communicate higher experiences.
And if they're supernatural, well then, yeah, you can never fully describe them using the tools of science.
Right.
So really the only response is just to keep studying and looking for new angles. And it's a field that is contentious, but there's a lot more to be done.
And it's fun.
Yeah.
It's a fun field.
Totally is.
And I would recommend to everybody to read Spook if you haven't yet.
Read Spook. And I highly recommend Dying to Live, Near-Death Experiences by Susan Blackmore.
Excellent. And, of course, Alex Malarkey's book that turned out to be a bunch of malarkey.
The Boy Who Came Back from Heaven. Yep. Read it.
Why not?
Thank you to Ross and Carrie for stepping in with us this week. We will try not to mess up your show, Oh No, Ross and Carrie. But, oh no, Justin and Sydney will be over there on their feed. So go check that out as soon as it's up, which hopefully will be very soon. Thanks.
We'd also like to thank the taxpayers for providing this awesome music.
And special thanks to Justin and Sydney McElroy for letting us host their show.
And for hosting our show. We're looking forward to hearing that.
Yeah, we finally have a doctor hosting our show. It's going to be great.
Yeah, some legitimacy. Finally.
My name's Carrie Poppy.
My name is Ross Blatcher.
And as always,
don't drill a hole in your head.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.